Welcome to the Single Mom Podcast, a show dedicated to all of you rock star moms out there who are doing it all on your own while trying to keep your sanity and sense of humor. Our show covers a ton of different topics, all intended to inspire and motivate you single moms out there to live your absolute best lives. Now, let's dive into today's show. And welcome to the Single Mom Podcast. I hope you're having a fantastic day today. If not, I'm hoping that this episode will turn it around because I am super excited to have a very special guest on the show today. Today, I am very, very blessed to have the fabulous Peter Shankman on with us today. And if you're not familiar who Peter Shankman is, he is actually a renowned author, entrepreneur, and ADHD advocate who has not only thrived with ADHD himself, but has also become a leading voice in helping parents, educators, and caregivers navigate the challenges and opportunities of raising kids with ADHD. So thank you for joining me today, Peter. How are you?
Well, I'm good. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm super excited about this because not only have I recently myself, just in the last couple of years, been diagnosed with ADHD, which explains a whole lot, but also I have children who are neurodiverse. And so, and I know that it's something that a lot of my listeners and so many other parents, you know, are working through with their own families and children. So, and I love the fact that in your bio, it talks about how the opportunities of raising a kid with ADHD. And recently you have just released a book called Boy with a Faster Brain, which is all about a young boy who is struggling with figuring out that he has ADHD. So can you tell me a little bit more about the book and why you wanted to put it out there?
Yes. I mean, I wasn't diagnosed till I'm in 30s. So growing up in the New York City public school system, I was diagnosed with something called sit down, you're disrupting the class. And that was pretty much my life. It was not fun. I was fortunate that I got into a performing arts high school, the FAME school, which helped me a lot because I had a talent that I could use and I could survive with. But, you know, in terms of sitting down and learning math or science or things that, you know, I enjoyed but and I loved but wasn't good at, it was very, very difficult. You know, the problem was also my English, my reading, my humanities was all off the charts. I was very, very good at that. And so I never qualified for any resources or any help. So school was really, really tough. And it was a constant battle, you know, constant fight. My parents were constantly on me, you know, why can't you just focus? Why can't you just pay attention? And they were wonderful parents. I still, you know, just talked to my mom 10 minutes ago, but it's very much about they were mystified, right? Why I could do one thing so well and then just completely zone out 20 minutes later in another class. And so I would get into trouble because without realizing it, I was looking for ways to up my dopamine. I was looking for ways to get the necessary chemicals in my head that would allow me to focus and allow me to pay attention. Unfortunately, I would do that in ways that didn't work. I would crack jokes in the middle of class, you know, and when the class laughed, I'd get a huge hit of dopamine, but then I get sent to the principal's office. So it was very, very hard for me. I wasn't really I wasn't into sports or athletics or anything like that. So I never got the, it's only now, in my early 50s, you know, I get into running in my early 30s and discovered, or late 20s, and discovered, wow, this is a high and I can use this high and I can benefit from this. So, you know, it took a long time for me to sort of understand what worked for me and sort of figure out where the benefits were and trying to avoid the pitfalls. But once I did, my life radically changed. And all the success I've had, I've started and sold 3 multimillion-dollar companies. And all the success I've had is because of, not in spite of, my neurodiversity. So I believe that my neurodiversity is totally responsible for all the good that I've been able to do. And so I wrote, you know, I've written 6 books, and my first 4 were business books. And then my 5th one was called Faster Than Normal. And that was when I finally took a deep dive look at myself and tried to figure out, you know, why I could start these companies, but, you know, couldn't save my marriage, or, you know, why I could do these things and not these things. And so over time, it led to my coming up with a sort of series of life hacks and ways that I was able to benefit myself. you know, simple things like completely eliminating choice, right? Whenever possible. I have two sides to my closet and they're literally labeled. One says office/travel and a t-shirt and jeans. The other says speaking/TV and it's button down shirts, jackets, and jeans. My sweaters, my vests, my suits, all that stuff is in my daughter's closet. Because if I ever had a look at that, you know, get off the bike, get out of the shower. Say, okay, what am I wearing today? Oh my God, that sweater. I remember that sweater. Laura gave me that sweater. Wow, I wonder how she's doing. I should look her up. It's 3 hours later.
Yes. I'm making this
on Facebook. I haven't left the house. So, you know, for me to be able to work the way I work, you know, these things have to happen. So I wrote this book called Faster Than Normal, and it really blew up. It was my first New York Times bestseller, and it really exploded. And then from there, everyone's like, oh my God, you should write a kid's book about your ADHD. And in classic ADHD style, I listened to everyone tell me I should do that, waited 5 years, and then wrote it in 45 minutes on a plane. And it's also blown up. It's done very, very well. And the purpose behind the book is so that no kid ever has to feel as broken as I did while I was growing up.
Yes, yes. And it's crazy to me how I'm amazed knowing now how much I struggle with ADHD, and not realizing that was the prime, like that was what was going on with me. I'm amazed how well I did, you know, throughout school. And I don't know if it's just like as I've gotten older and maybe my kids triggered it more than anything else. Like I tell my kids all the time that they ate my brain cells throughout, you know, parenting them, and that now I have mom brain. But I know that there are so many kids out there that struggle with it. And talking about what you just said, like as far as choices and stuff, I'm literally like, yep, that's exactly what happens to me. That is exactly why I can't get things done, is because I was telling an associate of mine that I have all these amazing ideas and things that I want to do for myself, for my business, right? All the stuff that I want to do. And it ends up being like, I told her it's like a spider web when like a windshield cracks or a window cracks, right? I have this great idea and ding, it hits my windshield, and then it spiders off into a million different tangents of what could be, what might be, what I should be doing, what could, and it just, nothing ever gets done. I'm just focusing on all the different, like a certain percentage of my brain goes to every single one of those little spider webs, and I can't actually get anything done. So I love that you've decided and that you wanted to create a book, especially for kids, so that they recognize that. And I love in reading the book that it was like, hey, this is kind of like a superpower, right? It's your brain works faster than normal. And what you really need to do is recognize that if you learn the ways to manage it, that it's really this amazing gift, right? It doesn't have to be a challenge. I really would love to dive into some of those more practical tips, because the one that you just said about your closet, I'm like, holy crap, why have I never thought about something like that? Because it would definitely help me in so many other places, not just my closet, because I'm like, choice is horrible for me. I compare it like a kid at a candy store, where I'm like, the second you give me so many options, I will spend forever trying to figure out what I want. Yep. So we're going to take a really quick break just to kind of, you know, pay the podcast gods. And then when we come back, I would love for you to give a few more really great practical tips, because I know that there's a lot of parents out there listening who, A, not only struggle with ADHD themselves probably, but also maybe have children who they're trying to help in productive ways. And like you said, your parents, sometimes we just don't know. Right. We struggle because especially if our parents, or if we as parents are not neurodivergent, it just doesn't make sense to us. Just like you said, my parents are like, we don't understand why you can't just sit down and do the thing. So yeah. We'll take a really quick break and be right back with Peter Shankman.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, welcome back. So we are talking with Peter Shankman, who has written this fabulous book, The Boy with the Faster Brain, all about children who are diagnosed or have not yet been diagnosed, but potentially struggle with ADHD and some of the challenges that come with that. And so before the break, we were talking about some practical tips and things that can help your kids or even yourself, because I'm looking for some really great tips myself, clearly, because this is just a fairly new thing to me where I'm like, I recognize that I have the struggle, but I'm still trying to figure out how to manage it in the best, most productive ways and really, you know, and also not beat myself up about it, because that's a struggle for me too, is that I'm like, I just don't understand why I can't get this done.
You know, it's interesting because a lot of ADHD is paradoxical. You know, you have these incredible ideas and these incredible thoughts and feel like you can accomplish anything, but you're afraid to start. Yes. You know, you absolutely positively are going to get the thing done and then you don't do it. You are, you know, as confident, the most confident person in the world, and then 2 seconds later, you're as nervous as anything. And so my favorite example is, we need accountability, but we hate when people give it to us. You know, I tell my trainer, okay, make sure you call me at 4:50. So I'll be there at, you know, 5:30. Calls me at 4:50. Okay, Peter, fuck you. Why are you calling me? You know, it's this constant, battle, right? Almost like a battle for good and evil. And so what I've learned is that you're never going to win against the demons inside of you are too strong to fight. The best and only way to survive them is not to engage. And so, you know, there are certain things I do and certain things I don't do that are designed to allow my brain to work the way it does. It is very, very rare that I drink, for instance. And when I do, I have a very specific way that I do it. You know, I don't go to open bar parties anymore. My industry was filled with open bar parties. And I don't have one drink, I have six. Not because I want to have six drinks, but because they're there. I drink alcohol the same way I drink water. And that's a problem. I'm not trying to get drunk. It's just in front of me. So I'm going to drink it. The thing about most neurodiversities, especially ADHD, is that we tend to have two speeds and two speeds only. And those two speeds are namaste and I'll cut a bitch. And there is absolutely no middle ground. And so you have to understand not to put yourself into certain situations. Right, to allow you to make sure you don't get into those situations. Right, so you know I have to work out in the morning. When I work out in the morning, I will be better. That's it. I'll be better, and I'll be a better dad. I'll be a better boyfriend. I'll be a better, you know, client, man, whatever, consultant, better speaker. So. To make sure I do that, I fall asleep in my gym clothes. I fall asleep in a pair of bike shorts and a pair of socks. And I have a Peloton that is 8 inches from my bed. I wake up. I can literally put on my bike shoes, clip in, and be riding without opening my eyes. And 5 minutes into the ride, I'll wake up, right? And the reason I do that is because when you're ADHD, you're very, very good. You're amazing, actually, at talking yourself into or out of anything. Yes. I'm a licensed skydiver with over 500 jumps because the dopamine I get from skydiving is awesome. And that very first jump, when you're ADHD, your brain has a lot more of the, what's the worst that can happen, gene? And so you know, like, let's fall out of a plane. Oh my God, that was crazy. Let's go do that 499 more times. And so, you know, it's the same thing with exercise. I can talk myself out of anything, into or out of anything. So, okay, you know what? I can work out this morning. I'm going to work out tonight. No, the hell I'm not. because as I'm walking home, I will figure out a way to, you know what? Oh, I read an article today. They found a new asteroid orbiting Pluto. You know what? Just to be safe, I should probably go home. Because you never know, right? And if something would happen, I really I'd want to be home with my dog. You know, if that asteroid happens to get kicked out, you know, of its orbit and hit Earth in 14 days. So because I shouldn't go to the gym tonight. So by waking up in my bike shorts and getting on the Peloton and doing an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours every morning, A, it stops me from getting fatter, which is good. And B, it gives me the dopamine, the serotonin, the adrenaline I need to get through my day.
Nice.
And so again, it's coming up. You know, I have a prescription for ADHD medication. I take it maybe three times a month. It's a daily prescription, but I take it maybe three times a month because I am able to use alternatives, exercise, public speaking, skydiving, whatever. You know, it's 71 degrees out today. I was this close to canceling our interview. If we hadn't already canceled it once, I would have again and said, you know what? I have an important meeting, and I would have gone upstate and jumped out of a plane a few times. it's a beautiful day here today. You know. And I sit in this corner office or corner of my apartment on the 60th floor overlooking the city. And I was like, wow, I should be up there. Right,
jump out of a plane.
Exactly. And so, you know, you come up with ways to allow yourself to use what you have to the best of your ability. In the book, I talk about how you have a sports car brain or a race car brain, but everyone else has a little Honda Accord. And so because everyone else has a Honda Accord, everyone is being driven or taught to drive like they have a Honda Accord. Problem is, if you have a Honda Accord, it's a nice car, but you might have to floor it to get on the highway because it's not really that fast. You floor a high-performance sports car to get on the highway, you're going to be 2 miles ahead of yourself crashing into a tree. So you have to learn how to drive your brain differently.
Right.
And that is your person in a nutshell. You have to learn how to drive your brain differently.
Right. And in the book, you talk about CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, just ways to train your brain to kind of slow it down and function a little bit better and just basically hack your brain. I mean, it's kind of what I'm hearing. It's like the thought of, oh, I'll fall asleep in my gym clothes so that when I wake up in the morning, I just do it because I feel like it's like you've removed a barrier, right? Like there's a barrier of something that makes you want to go, oh, I have to do that one thing before I can do the other thing. So if you remove it, it takes away that wall that keeps you from doing the thing, which is a fabulous idea. And having your Peloton so close to your bed, I love that. I feel like there's so many, I guess that's what I've always, like, I've been struggling with trying to figure out myself is like, how can I hack my brain? Because that is what I run into that so much myself where I'm like, I need to do all these things X, Y, Z for my business. I need to do this project. I need to finish this, whatever. But I got this book that I started and the world that I'm in right over there is so much more interesting. Yeah. Than this. And so I'd rather spend time in that because it's easier and it's more fun than finishing this project for my work or my business. Right. And so I would love to talk a little bit more about another reason why I think that you wrote this book, especially for kids, is just sort of some of the stigma that comes. And I know that that's sort of an underlying theme in this children's book. We're going to take another really quick break and then we're going to talk about that because I think that it's really important, especially for kids, right? As an adult, I know that I'm like, oh my God, my brain is just sucky right now for whatever reason. But as a kid, it's a huge struggle, I think. And so we're going to take one quick break and come back with Peter.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, welcome back. We are still talking with the fabulous Peter Shankman author of The Boy with the Faster Brain, which is all about a young man who is discovering that he has ADHD and it's figuring out ways to help himself manage it. So one of the things that I feel is a struggle for a lot of kids, it's not that ADHD is not uncommon. It's, I mean, you hear about it all the time now. It used to be, right? I remember my cousin back when they were first talking about it, first came out, right? And unfortunately, he was given a lot of Ritalin, which sort of turned him into a walking zombie because they were just learning about it, just figuring it out. So many kids now, it's a struggle because you want to be quote unquote normal, right? And like you mentioned in the book, when you struggle with ADHD, sometimes it presents in ways that are disruptive, right? And so I know that obviously Faster Than Normal, great, fabulous book that I actually bought and have just started, which I'm really excited about. But this being as you wanted to write a kid's book, and what kind of, like, I know that there's a stigma, right? You want to talk about why writing a kid's book was so important to you?
Well, like I said, I grew up with a very difficult, I'm not gonna say a difficult childhood because I wasn't, like, you know, beaten or anything like that, but it was very tough because I was different and I didn't know when to shut up. I had the social acuity of a turnip. And it was very hard to fit in because I was constantly trying to, when you're ADHD, you almost from birth, you start to believe that you're not good enough. And so one of the things you do to mask that or to overcome that is you start to try and tell people that you are. And the problem there is that you wind up telling people too much and you wind up being too overbearing and annoying, for lack of a better word. So it was difficult because I would constantly have that problem where I never knew when to shut up. I was always talking too much. I was talking out of turn. I was saying the wrong thing. I was trying to crack jokes when I shouldn't have. And so, you know, getting to the point where as an adult I realized all that stuff and sort of learning about myself and how to be better with that led to wanting to help people, wanting to help kids feel that same way. And never, again, not wanting any kid to ever feel the way I did growing up, to feel as broken as I did growing up. So I was able to, I wanted to write this book so the children would understand that they're not broken and they're gifted as long as they understand how to use their brain. And if they could figure out a way to do that at an early age, they can have a much happier life overall, as opposed to spending the next 30 years in therapy trying to undo all the damage that came to them over the previous first 10 or 15 years of their life.
Right.
So I sort of look at it like that.
Yeah. And I could totally understand that because I do. I mean, like I said, I wasn't diagnosed at a young age, but unfortunately my cousin was. But like I do remember it was just very demeaning for him to like, he just constantly felt like there was something wrong with him. He was the bad kid. He couldn't behave. He couldn't sit still. He couldn't function. And, I have children with special needs. Both of my boys have traumatic brain injuries, which is not necessarily the same, but there's a lot of behavioral issues and cognitive issues that can be similar to, you know, because it is all still very brain related. Right. And so just that knowledge that, you know, my son his brain injury was far more extreme than the other, but just that feeling of I'm broken, there's something wrong, I hate that I'm like this, right? And so I can definitely understand as a kid how hard that would be to grow up feeling like I'm not quote unquote normal, and so therefore I'm bad or wrong, again, depending on how old they are when they start kind of recognizing that. But that's really, really important, I think. And I love that more is coming out about ADHD, books like yours, that it's becoming less of a stigma, but it is so hard, right? For kids in school, especially because, and then also, you know, for teachers and the educators who are like, I have a group of kids, a large group of kids, and this section of them have no problem sitting down. And
right, exactly. Well, that's the key is, you know, everyone, blame the teacher. You can't blame the teacher. The teacher being asked to 10 times more with 5 times less. And yes, it is very difficult for them to handle 28 kids and then two who learn differently. Right. Exactly. So measures have to be taken long before the kid hits the classroom. And even when the kid is in the classroom, there are things that a kid can do that the kid can be allowed to do, accommodations that can be made that actually work for all kids. You know, the simple act of when a kid feels like he's starting to get fidgety or whatever, he's allowed to go to the back of the room and just stand up.
Yeah. Right?
And work from a standing position for a while. That can work for everyone. Mm-hmm. Right. The concept of being allowed to take a test while wearing noise canceling headphones, mm-hmm. Being able to wear glasses that reduce the glare on the chalkboard, things like that. They're not overarching or overreaching accommodations, and they work for everyone.
Yeah. And I've definitely dealt with that with my kids. And I think that there's a lot of parents out there who don't realize that they have the ability to ask for those things for their kids. Right. And unfortunately, not every school or teacher is going to be accommodating. I wish that was the case. We've been very blessed in our school district to, you know, be able to meet with teachers. You know, my daughter has her own struggles with anxiety and things like that. And so every year, once we recognize that was a struggle for her, you know, she has been able to go in now that she's in high school. Before school even starts, she meets all of her teachers. So she feels comfortable talking to them, and she's not having to do it in a setting where she's in front of all the other kids trying to get to know her teachers. She gets to meet them before school even starts, right? So she can talk to them, tell them, this is what I struggle with. This is what I need. This is what helps me, and just work out a plan. And I think that, you know, like you said, everybody's like, oh, it's the teacher's fault. No, the teacher can only do so much, right? And so as a parent, you need to also have the ability and confidence to go, okay,
you need to advocate for your child.
Exactly. Yeah, you advocate for your child and say, look, I know that my son struggles with this. And so here's the things that we do at home, or, you know, can we try these things at school, and do it in a way where it's like, it's, he'll be far less disruptive. It's less disruptive to let him stand up and go in the back of the classroom and stand up for a little bit and wiggle around than him cracking jokes that are inappropriate and having to be sent to the principal's office, right? Exactly. So just being able to do that, I think, is wonderful. And just recognizing that, and that's the hard part too, because one of the things that my daughter struggled with when we were talking about these things is that it made her feel like, I don't want to feel different. I don't want to feel like I'm different than the other kids. And so we also had to have conversations where I was like, I know you don't want to feel different, but you are a little different. There's nothing wrong with that. That doesn't mean that you're bad or there's anything wrong. It just means that whatever's going on with you, we just need to figure out how to help you so that you can have the best experience. It doesn't mean that you're bad. There's nothing wrong with you. You're just processing things differently than other kids do. And that's okay, you know? And so I really love that you're working and putting things out there, and that there's more and more and more information out there that's helping sort of getting rid of that stigma. So we're going to take one really quick last break, and then we're going to finish up with Peter and talk with him a little bit more about, you know, his, you know, future outlook and what he sees as the future and trends and things like that for ADHD and managing it. So we'll be right back. All right. Thanks so much for joining us again today, Peter. We are back. And before we say goodbye to you, I would love to hear, as we were talking back when my cousin was diagnosed, early days of ADHD, it was just, we just want to make you sit there and be quiet, right? Like, that's all we're trying to do is make it so that you're not disrupting our day, right? And we've come so far, and so much more has been learned, researched, found out about ADHD, how to manage it. And so I would love to hear more about what you are seeing as far as like the future outlook of ADHD and the trends and how things like technology are helping with that.
I think that what I've seen from companies, I'm being hired by a lot of companies to help create their neurodiversity framework for everything from hiring to attracting, the hiring to keeping neurodiverse employees, and what they can do to accommodate them once they're there. And I think the key word to remember is neuroinclusive. Neuroinclusive is essentially the fact that whether you have a normal brain or a faster than normal brain, you are part of an inclusive world. Neurodiversity is the diversity that covers all of the diversities. You might be a trans woman of color and have ADHD. You might be a white cisgendered male and have dyslexia. There is nothing that doesn't fall under the category of neurodiversity that can affect everything else. So as we start to understand that, and as companies start to realize that, they can tackle a much larger range of business challenges by increasing the range of cognitive talents that they hire, you're going to see a lot more understanding. So, you know, Israel's defense forces, the IDF, actually has an entire division of nothing but neurodiverse soldiers because they look at things differently. They see things differently. So it's things like that. It's understanding that there is a tremendous benefit to having a neurodiverse brain, to working with a neurodiverse brain, to hiring neurodiverse people. You know, my girlfriend currently talks about how it's an adventure with me all the time, and in a good way, in that, you know, she, when you're neurodiverse, you want to be with someone who is up for the challenge because it's never going to be the same thing twice. You know, it's, hey, are you free this weekend? Cool. Meet me at Newark Airport in 20 minutes. Let's go somewhere. Oh, where are we going? I don't know. We'll figure it out when we get there. You know, and 14 hours later, we wind up in the Maldives, and it's a wonderful way to live. But it's not for everyone. Right. My ex-wife, who I'm still very good friends with, and we share a daughter, and we're very close. We talk every day. She was not a fly by the seat of her pants person.
Right.
And it didn't sit well with her when I would do those things in my head. I'm thinking, who wouldn't love to go on a random vacation? And, you know, there are people who need much more structure than that. And
yeah, so it sounds like a fabulous. I'm like, yes, I'll sign up for that.
If you can create a world that has the best of all possible outcomes and all possible cognitions, then you've really created something.
Yes. And I think that that's wonderful, especially the way that you put it, is trying to help people understand not just companies, but schools, children, like everybody, just recognizing that, you know, first of all, what a boring world it would be if we all thought the same and functioned the same and everything was the same. It's just meh, right? But just recognizing that the benefits of having this brain that can come up with these amazing solutions and ideas and possibilities, and just recognizing that having various different people with various different abilities and various different neurodiversities gives you so many more options and possibilities. And, you know, because how often do we just, you know, quote unquote, neurotypical, normal, you know, quote unquote, people who are like, oh, I've been trying to figure out this problem. I'm remembering something like a story a long time ago from a movie. I can't even remember what it was. It was way back in the 80s where it was like, you know, they were trying to figure out how to get this truck. It got stuck under a bridge and they were trying to figure out.
The movie was Working Girl, and the CEO tells a story about an 8-year-old girl who was driving past and says, hey,
let the air out of the tires. Yes, right? Like, it's just, you had all these people who couldn't figure out how to get this truck unstuck, and a little kid who thought outside of the box was like, why don't you let the air out of the tires? They're giving us space and then you can move the truck. Things like that. Just having the ability to look at a problem and see it from a different angle, perspective, is so much a benefit. And so I think that, you know, things like your book and more, you know, information out there that lets kids at an early age, because like you said, wishing that you'd have had something like that when you were younger so that you didn't have years of going, I have to undo this feeling that I'm broken, that there's something wrong with me. Yeah. So the more that kids can recognize that it's a superpower is fabulous. And so I love that. And I'm so glad that there's people like you and other people who are just kind of extolling the value of ADHD and being neurodivergent and seeing things differently is amazing to me.
Okay, so, thank you.
Yeah. So I am so glad that you joined us. Thank you so much, Peter. If you are interested in learning more about Peter, you should go to www.shankman.com. You can find out all about Peter and the amazing things. I've seen some of your TED Talks and various different things that you've done on that site, and I loved it. And if you're interested, you definitely should pick up a copy of The Boy with the Faster Brain if you have young ones and children who you may believe are potentially, you know, ADHD, or even if they're not, just recognizing that it's totally fine if your brain functions a little bit outside of the quote-unquote norm. It can actually be a wonderful thing. So go and learn more about it. Pick yourself up a copy of the book. And thank you so much again for joining us, Peter. It was fabulous having you.
Pleasure was mine. Thanks for having me.
All right, everybody. I hope you found today's episode helpful, and definitely go check out Peter. We'll talk to you again soon. Have a great day. Thanks so much for joining me today for this episode of the Single Mom Podcast. I really hope that you enjoyed it. There is even more great stuff over at the Single Mom blog, so please be sure to head on over to thesinglemomblog.com. And also, don't forget to follow us on all of our social media channels so that you know anytime a new episode is posted.